You are listening to Punk News Podcast episode 641, a special episode, because my two co-hosts, M and Sam, got scared. And why they get scared? They got scared because Dom Romeo of End Reign, Dom Romeo of Integrity, Dom Romeo of Thor's Teeth is here tonight. And he's going to talk about his new album, his debut album with End Reign. And Dom, it's a pleasure to have you on. Thanks for being on the show.
Hi, John. Thanks for having me. Hello. Hello, everybody.
The listeners probably know Dom. Dom is at A389 Records. That's down in Baltimore area, or correct?
Yeah. It's always been based out of Baltimore. I live just outside of Baltimore now in the Baltimore burbs, but it's still Baltimore. It always has been.
Dom's been running A389 Records for like, what, 15 years now? Almost 20 or something like that?
Yeah. Almost 20.
And Dom is a real crucial guy in, I guess, the heavier, harder scene. You're actually from, like, Toronto or something, right, originally?
Yeah, originally from Toronto, Ontario, Canada.
And, he's been down in Baltimore a long time now. And the way I first got to know Dom is because I got into Integrity through the V Destroyer compilation CD, which I got at Streetlight Records Santa Cruz for $6.66. And then Dom threw a show in Integrity. It was, maybe the fourth to last A389 bashes. I think it's the first one that Integrity played instead of Blackest Curse, right?
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah, that would have been 2009? Eight skipped Integrity, and then nine, Integrity came back. It was like Integrity, Pulling Teeth, Paula, War Priest, and Oak, I think. And the poster had like the Walpurgis Knot screen print from Florian Brettner. Yeah. That would have been 2009 if we're thinking of the same show. Integrity and Ringworm, and Gehenna and Pulling Teeth, etc. So I'm not sure which one you're referring to, but one of those, I'm sure.
So A389 used to throw these amazing festivals. I guess you call them festivals down in Baltimore. Was it Ram's Head Lodge or the Baltimore Soundstage, or both? I guess, right.
It started at Auto Bar, and got too big for Auto Bar.
That's right.
Then it moved to the Sonar in the smaller room, and it got too big for that, and it became Sonar, all three rooms at its peak. And then when Sonar closed down, it crossed town to the Baltimore Soundstage. And the last really big one was the Integrity Melnick's reunion year, 2014, which was the 10th anniversary. And after that, I never wanted to do anything that big ever again, so I scaled it back down, and it was back to like doing smaller shows after that.
Well, and actually, before we get too off the track, let's hit with an End Reign track right now. I've lost track of which ones have been released. The one with Pink Dots has been released, correct?
Yeah, that's Chaos Mass Disorder with Dylan Walker from Hell and Edward Caspell from Legendary Pink Dots on that one.
So let's play that, and then we'll be right back.
Yeah.
And we are back, and that's Off End Reigns, debut LP, The Way of All Flesh is Decay, out July 14 via Relapse. It's got a lot of cool guests on it, including Dwid of Integrity and also Ed Cospell. And let's see who, well, a whole bunch of cool people on it. So anyways, to get back to our the kickoff of our interview. So the way I got into Dom stuff is through Integrity. And Dom, I don't know how much credit you take of this, but to me, you're kind of the architect behind Integrity's current renaissance, which has been going on for about 10 years now or so. Kind of that one of the main guys that brought, I guess, Integrity back to have focus and have each album have a real, I guess, cohesion to it.
I mean, I think Dwid, that's definitely a Dwid thing. I like to think of myself as like, you know, I'm a facilitator. Whether it's Integrity or whether it's Cold as Life now, it's like I take their ideas and I just help them make it happen. You know what I mean? I do what I can to make their vision come to life. And with End Rain, that was my record and my vision. So it was kind of like, you know, it was fun to get in the driver's seat again. But, you know, I'm a passionate fan of Integrity. This is my favorite band ever since I was a teenager. So, you know, I hold it near and dear to my heart. But, you know, I don't think I could take that extensive of a credit, although it's very generous on your part. I think it's more of just, you know, I always wanted to preserve what I loved and what was great about Integrity and presented to the world that way. And I think we did a really good job those years we worked together, and we still do, you know what I mean? Just in a different capacity now.
Actually, I'm going to get to NRAN in just one second, but I want to give some of the listeners background in that. You, as the listeners know, I babble incessantly about the summer soirees that I throw up in Philadelphia. And Dom is definitely one of the inspirations behind the Punk News summer soirees, because Dom engineered the Integrity, basically classic era lineup reunion show. You did the Wall Persnat lineup reunion, but also you did some what I call like one-off or wacky shows, which I absolutely love, is while in Pulling Teeth, you backed, his name is like John Meeklethor. Is that how you say his name?
Thor, Canadian slash metal god.
So, and he actually put out a live album, and the live album was real cool because they take Thor songs like Thunder in the Tundra, which are like power metal songs, but they give them a real dark and aggression, kind of the sound that Dom is known for. So I got to say, Dom, off the bat, kudos to you for engineering these one-off events, which as a fan, I always love. And here's the question for you, and then we'll get into End Rain. As someone that throws much smaller scale show than you, but you know, the one-off things like Sturgeon with Crazy in the Brains or Dwarves with Danbert, No Bacon of Chumbawamba, that kind of stuff. Do you feel the audience truly appreciates the amount of work and ingenuity it takes to make these one-off once-in-a-lifetime things happen? Or afterwards, do you have a certain frustration? You know, I put all this work into it and I'm not sure 100% of the people there appreciated the uniqueness of this event.
No, it's more like, you know, I think if they knew, it's, you know, you really have to put yourself in their shoes. And if they saw how the sausage was made, so to speak, maybe they would have a greater appreciation or understanding. But they're really there to, you know, just be in the moment and enjoy that for what it is, you know what I mean? So I would never expect anybody to be like, wow, you know, he really dotted all the I's and crossed the T's to make that happen. He made sure, you know.
See, that's what I want. I want people to come over afterwards, shake my hand and say, thank you for doing all the hard work. But I guess being a behind the scenes guy, you know, either a record label or organizing shows, it kind of is a thankless job. And actually, let me pitch this question at you and then we'll get into End Rain. As someone that runs a record label or as someone that has organized crazy shows, if you are expecting personal feedback or kudos or gratitude, are you doing it for the wrong reason? Or maybe you're not.
I think that's in the eye of the beholder. You know what I mean? People have different reasons for doing things, and I don't think there's a wrong or a right. But for me, I just took things that I wanted to see happen that nobody else was doing, and I made them happen. You know, that was kind of how I wanted to approach it. It was always about what I wanted. It was never about, hey, you know, it's really going to bring 2,000 kids into a room as if I do X, Y, Z. It was always like, no, I really wish Bloodlight would play again. You know, and it was just more just like, how do I get that to happen? And it was kind of like playing God, but at a much smaller and insignificant scale that only few would care about in the grand scheme of things. But no, to answer your question, if you know you want what Superior Alex, my 8389's right hand man, he would call it the nod. He definitely would call it the nod. He's like, you know, when it's a job well done, words don't have to be exchanged, but someone walks by and they just give you the nod. It's known. He goes, you get the nod all the time. You don't really realize it. I'm like, I'm not looking for it. You know what I mean? It's just, that's not why I'm here. It's never been why I'm here. It's just been more just like, I just like stuff, I guess. You know, it sounds lame. Like, hey, I like stuff, you guys. But you know, I like doing.
No, things. Actually, I disagree. And then I promise we'll get into end rain. I don't know if I would say A389 is metal. Maybe it's metal or metal influence or whatever. But I go to punk and hardcore shows. And then when you go to what I call maximum rock and roll style bands, people kind of just stand there and they're like, that was cool. And that's all they'll say. Where I want people to say, I mean, either people are acting like they think it's cool when it's really just well done but generic, or they're scared to say that was really, really awesome. I think in both the punk and metal scenes, people need to drop the facade of being too cool for school or being cool for, and just say, wow, that is a really neat thing. Or if they personally don't think it's that cool, not going along with the flock, and I realize I'm being somewhat abstract here, not going along with the flock and saying, everyone else is saying this is cool, but I just think it's kind of not that special. I don't know if you, do you feel, am I jaded or do you have those similar feelings?
I might be dating myself by saying this, but I think there's a sweet spot where if your audience is really young, they'll appreciate it.
Yes.
A lot older, they'll appreciate it.
Yes.
It out, and that's what they're there for. But that middle audience is still trying to figure things out, and they're just having a good time. And that's okay, too. You know, I mean, like I said, no two people are there for the same reason, nor are you going to get the same response as delightful as it would be to be like, hey, man, great job, you know? It's just like, it's, I don't know, it's not really that important to me. If I think it's cool and I had a good time and it's like seeing history happen, you know what I mean, was cool. Like just seeing stuff that, and you know, I can relate to what you're saying, but in a different axis, if you think of it like, I see something that I thought was of like tremendous magnitude, like seeing Bloodlet reform with like mostly all the original guys and like seeing like, you know, Thor play an all personal pick set by me. Like these are things that I think are amazing that regular, you know, John Smith at the show might not really care. Just be like, oh, that was a fun night, but not really. I think things have like a different gravity to different people. And I don't know, I guess it's a perspective that comes with getting older and just like realizing that everybody sees things differently. No two people see things the same, you know? So just be grateful that they showed up, I guess, you know, and that they participated in whatever way they saw fit.
In regards to being in bands and playing shows, how old do you feel? That is, when you're out there playing, do you feel like you're in the mix? Or do you feel like all these people are younger than me and I don't really fit in here anymore? How old do you, or maybe you feel like, oh, I'm around by a bunch of legends and I'm just a young guy. Where do you feel with regard to that?
I feel I'm out of place. It's, you know, I still appreciate that anyone cares and would want me to play or want me to do whatever it is. But, you know, it's like, I always thought like hardcore, especially with hardcore music, it's a young person's game. And I feel like when I was young, I wanted to see my peers on stage. I wanted to see people that were like my age or maybe a little bit older that I looked up to. And, you know, in that capacity. And I think staying within that framework is what's kept hardcore alive all this time. It, you know, transitions, it morphs, it keeps going, it evolves. But that rule stays intact. You know what I mean? That's why there's always like a popular band that ties to a certain generation. And why the older bands have an older audience. And that doesn't mean the older bands aren't going to have younger fans or vice versa. That's all in the mix as well, of course. But, you know, I feel like I'm an older dude. I have kids. I have life outside of music and outside of hardcore. And I tend to connect with people that are kind of in the same boat that I'm in life, you know, that are just there because they love it. But I'm also welcome to anybody that is there for any other reason. You know what I mean? If they're there because whatever, you know what I mean? Despite if it's an earnest and like good enough reason, then sure, you know, I'm all for it. Whatever works for you. But yeah, I definitely feel old. And I'm not even old as most. I'm not gonna mention names, but I'm not the oldest one in the camp by far.
Just to go off on an example, I think of Glenn Danzig. When I see Danzig though, I don't think there's an old guy. I think there's Danzig. You know what I mean? Although some actually do go see and you're like, man, that guy looks old. But you know, so I don't know how, I guess once you reach a certain level, age is irrelevant so long as you can keep bringing, you know, the level of artistic excellence people expect, which right. is a difficult challenge too.
Yeah, but Danzig also falls into the arc of our age group and our demographic. He's kind of like, you know, a little bit older than us and he was the guy we looked up to. So that makes him timeless. When we see Danzig, we see like, check out my books. This one's about werewolves. Danzig, you know what I mean? I don't think about like Even though obviously he's a lot older and weathered and a life well lived, he's accomplished so much. But you know, it's like the same thing. Like when I'm around Dwid, I see like systems overload or humanity's a devil Dwid in my head. You know what I mean? Even though, you know, he's older and just, it's like you kind of like freeze frame like the version that you grew up with. Is like that's the, you know, what you see when you like. And I mean, you know, when I reference Dwid, I mean it as a fan, as like a perspective, not when we're hanging out, but like, you know, when I'm thinking of the band or if I'm listening to an Integrity record, even a later one, it's just like you're always locked into like that favorite era of what the band presented itself as. Even Kiss is a perfect example. If people think of prime era Kiss, they don't want to think of like Golden Girls, Asylum era Kiss, you know, they want to think of the classics. And I think that, you know, it locks it in. It's a time and place thing for sure. But that doesn't mean young people don't enjoy Danzig too. My daughter is 10 and her favorite band is the Misfits and she's obsessed with Danzig. So there's definitely room for everybody. So,
cool. Well, Dom was referencing Mortality. And of course, the title of N-Ray's new record is The Way of All Flesh is Decay. Dom, how often do you think about mortality and death?
Too often. I think it's, I don't know if it's accelerated by COVID and just a weird, almost like I was talking about this today with somebody. I know we get deep, but it's like I don't mean to sound all like, you know, existential, but like sometimes you wonder what the point of everything is, and everything seems kind of one, especially after like a big thing like COVID, and then the world doesn't seem to have gotten any better. It seems more dysfunctional than ever. Nothing seems to really make any sense, and you realize what little control you have over everything in general. But you know, on the other side of the coin, and it's a much flashier side of the coin that I prefer to hold closer to me, you know, is I got a lot to live for. You know, I mean, love my family. I love making music. I love waking up every day. You know, I'm up at 5 o'clock every day making breakfast for everybody. And like, I like hearing about everybody's day. And I love like hearing music that excites me or seeing a movie that excites me or just experiences that excite me in general, you know? And nowadays that comes more in the shape of just meeting people that have shared either a similar life experience to my own or have something interesting to share to bring to the table. That's their story. I think everybody has a story, and it's everybody's story is inspiring. And it's just a matter of connecting that story to the right person. And you can take that to a bigger level and think about it as music. You know what I mean? Music or is your story, and whether it connects to like the five people that might be interested in your weird dungeon synth, industrial rap, whatever, you know, or something that's much more palatable that can reach a lot of people. It doesn't, it's cool. I think it's always just an exchange of energy and ideas. And as far as mortality goes, that's the stuff that keeps me going, you know?
A lot of your bands have talked about existential things and, you know, mystical things and magical things and dimensions and all that kind of stuff. What is the Dom Romeo perspective of after death? Is there anything or is there nothing?
Man, you know, for years, I thought it was nothing. For years, I thought it was like, that's it, you know, good night, put me in a ditch, sayonara. But now that I'm older and it's just like, you know, you get closer to that line, I don't know, you know? I don't know. I don't imagine there's like, just like, you know, like a heaven where it's just like everybody that's ever died is there waiting for you, because that shit would be weird, you know? I mean, you go up there and like see your uncle that you haven't seen in like 30 years, like, what are you going to talk about? Like, how excited are you? I have like a 3-day rule with anybody. Like, I don't want to spend anyone that's not my wife or kids, I don't want to spend more than 3 days with you. After 3 days, it's kind of like you wear out your welcome. Imagine an eternity of having to stay with people. That would be terrible. So, you know, it's kind of off the table for me. And I like to think, I don't know, reincarnation sounds nice. I kind of have an attitude that I'll find out when the time comes, I guess. You know, I'm kind of open-minded to anything, though. I'm not really into denouncing much. I'm not as pig-headed about it as I was as a younger man. I'm kind of just like, anything's really possible, you know? Why not? The world's weird enough as it is. Only get weirder.
If you have a 3-day rule, how do you go on tour then?
Oh my God. It's just like, it's a lot of, I'm really good about personal space, as are people I tour with usually, you know what I mean? It can get, you know, van rides offer like a different level of dementia that come with like entertaining yourself, and it's kind of, you know, relentless and it freezes time and space. But it is a general rule, like, you know, I always like, we call it the law of visiting people and vice versa. It's just like 3 days is like usually the sweet spot. Anything, you leave them wanting more. It's just like music, you know what I mean? You don't want to play a 3-hour set. You give them like 45 minutes of hits and you're out of there, you know? So it's kind of my attitude I've adopted to life.
End Rain is, I guess, Dom, is End Rain the first band where it's Dom at the helm exclusively?
Yes. Well, kind of. Yes, I think so. I mean, there's been like projects and other things. There's a lot of projects that were spawned from where End Rain was written during that pandemic writing spree. They're all stuff I wrote. But I'm usually the architect behind the band, at least musically. This is the first time where, you know, of course, Mike Score handled the lyrics and the direction. But as far as the band's aesthetic and the vibe and all the music for End Rain, yeah, it was the first time. And that's coming out from under, you know, Shadow of Dwid for being in Integrity for such a prolific amount of time. And, you know, it's Dwid's band, and as it is, as it should be. And for a long time, I just sat shotgun and kind of like, you know, worked on the music end. He made the important decisions, and it was great. You know what I mean? It was totally what I needed in my life at the time. And then it turned into something where I came back and I was able to drive again. And it took a little bit of learning how to do it again. But in Pulling Teeth, you know, the same thing. Musically, 100%. But as far as like a band that being like totally like in charge of, End Rain's probably the first time where it's just been like, you know, the decision making's kind of left to me. And it's worked out, you know. It's still pretty democratic. Everyone's still got to say if something sucks. By all means, you know, we've all hashed it out a few times to make the record what it is. And I think, you know, the record's better for it. But at the end of the day, I just handle everything myself. It's not having to wait on everybody. You know, I'm just kind of keep things moving. It's a fast world, so it's easy to fall behind, you know?
Different bands, I guess, and different organizations have different setups, you know, but you mentioned that the band, people have to vote on things. And I guess I'm curious, as it like, let's go back to Danzig. Danzig, the band, Danzig's calling the shots. He's the man. And I got to say, you have to give him credit. Between Misfits, Samhain, and Danzig, there's seriously like 12 to 14 killer albums worth, you know, between those groups, right? And it's not a democracy. It's a dictatorship. But then if you look at like The Clash is somewhat more, well, actually Chumbawamba. Chumbawamba is a democracy or even a communism type thing, whereas say like Clash or Sex Pistols is a power struggle, and so different, or Black Flag, the ultimate power struggle band, right? You know? So I guess, do you have a preference? You know, do you like being a dictator, or do you prefer democracy, or what do you like?
Dictator all the way, and the best is when you're a dictator disguising things as a democracy, like regular society. But you know, I think it's important that somebody's driving. It's always like, you know, any other bands I've been in, when there's been too much of a equal say, kind of like things kind of just go all over the place. You know what I mean? And it lacks that uniform presentation, you know? And I think it's cool when it doesn't have to be 100%, you know, fascist rule, but having a majority stake on how things are going to go kind of just ensures that it's going to hold to an aesthetic that you've decided on for the band. And I think that's cool. I think that's what's made Integrity great for so many years, you know. Same with Danzig and all Danzig related things. And yeah, I agree with you. I would definitely say, like, you know, not 100%, not a fascist dictatorship, but you know, Sex Man used to call it a benevolent dictatorship. I think that sums it up pretty well.
The members of End Rain on drums on guitar is Sebastian Phillips of, let's see here, of Noisemen Exhumed. Let's see here. There's Arthur of Bloodlet on bass. Dom, you're on guitar, correct?
Correct.
And then, of course, singing is, Mike Score of, what I find, of All Out War. Interesting, Dom, here's a bit of trivia for you. What pop star also has the name Mike Score? And what group is the other Mike Score in?
The Flock of Seagulls, right?
Exactly. One of my all-time favorites. Yep. So maybe you should try to get the other Mike Score on your recording as well. At any rate, the record is really cool. I guess, Dom, why did you choose to work with these guys on this record? Oh, and of course, on drums is Adam Jarvis, of course, of Pig Destroyer and Misery Index as well.
With this, it was a... Well, you know, to rewind a little bit, it was during the pandemic when I was on a bit of a writing spree, to keep saying. I was writing a ton of songs, not sure what I was going to do with them. And then I came up with the idea where I was going to do a mixtape we were all locked down. All of us were in the same situation, kind of losing our minds, you know? And the idea was to make a mixtape of different bands that were all, you know, made up bands that I made up and have different people on all the songs and just, you know, record them all onto like a Maxell tape, like how you did when we were kids, you know, you write the songs on the J card and mail them out to my friends. You know what I mean? Keep each other entertained during this time. And when the song that spawned End Rain came about, it was the song House of Thieves on the album, but an earlier version. And we were like, you know, really big on Cro-Mags doing a new album that Harley did, that In the Beginning album that was with him and had Rocky George on it. It was like one of my favorite guitar players ever. And I remember getting it. And, you know, I love everything Cro-Mags does, but wishing it was more like Best Wishes and less like Age of Quarrel, like a little less direct hardcore and a little more, you know.
Bold stance. Bold hey, stance.
It's you know, it doesn't mean it's the right stance, but it's my stance. And I was like, you know, it got me thinking where I'm like, if I wanted this record to sound a certain way, what would I make it sound like? And I wrote House of Thieves to reflect that, the music. And I sent it to Mike because Mike and I are both like Best Wishes nerds. We love Best Wishes. We like fawn over it relentlessly. A lot of my friends do. We're very fond of it. And when he sent back vocals for that track, it was just a perfect fit. You know what I mean? I was like, wow, this would really be something. And the mixtape kind of got ditched for four or five different bands ended up performing out of there with their own records, their own like full albums, you know, written and demoed in different stages. Some are actually in the process of being full albums that are in the studio being completed. End Rain was being the first one to be completed all the way. No, Permanent Mistakes was, I'm sorry. And then End Rain, but I digress. Going back to, so we had Mike doing the vocals. I'm like, let's make this a real thing. And Joshy from Ilsa and in Plays and Integrity sometimes helped me demo out all the songs I wanted to use from the writing spree into like, you know, a little more cohesive, usable demos. And I got to thinking, I'm like, okay, I got the option here to do this record with whoever I want. I'm not bound by Integrity's rules of who's in the band or whatever. It's kind of like, I don't have to run anything by anybody with this. And I think it's cool. So, you know, I just started from the bottom up. Jarvis and I used to work at a Guitar Center in the early 2000s together with Mitch from Pulling Teeth worked there. It was a really fun, lawless place to work back then. A lot of wild stories and stupidity. But we always talked about doing something. So I hit him up and I was like, you know, we've always talked. And I'm a big person that believes about following through on something. If you say, hey, we should do this, and I'm never a dude that's like, huh, one day we should do this, you know, not mean it. You know, I don't really say things unless I intend on actually doing it. So I said, hey, you know, we should make good on that thing we always talked about. Let's do it. I got these songs. And it turned out he actually lived down the street from me. So this whole time during lockdown, Jarvis lived like a block or two from my house. So we started getting together. I sent him the demos that Josh and I made, and he learned all the songs, and we started putting them together. And we made time to go book with Len at Landmine Studios out in Ewing, New Jersey. Another rule that I thought was cool was I wanted to record in a new studio that I'd never been in before. So that was set up and we were good to go. And I was like, wow, all right. I could play bass on this record like I did with Integ, or, you know, we could keep going where I'm like, you know, just whoever, Fantasy League, you know, I mean, who would I get? And Bloodlet's one of my favorite 90s bands, as I've fawned over them a couple times in this conversation already. And I hit up Art. You know, Art wasn't really doing anything either. He was kind of just hanging out. And I offered to buy his plane ticket if he could learn the songs and come out and do the record. And it took him like a week. The dude's like, you know, savant. He's a madman. And came out. And me, him, and Jarvis went out to Jersey. And we shacked up in this farmhouse that was just outside of Ewing. And we stayed there for almost a week, living in this weird farmhouse with, like, I didn't know eggs were warm, right? When you're in a farm, I didn't know they just give you like eggs on your table. I thought like that was really gross and weird. I was like bugging out, but behold, there they were. Weird side, I know, but forgive me, I'm spinning out of control here. Let me bring reel it back in. So yeah, we tracked the record. All the music was done. And all that was left was Mike to do his vocals and me to do guitar solos. And Mike and I were both on opposite schedules. We're both busy with careers, families, et cetera, et cetera. So we were never there at the same time. I would go on a Wednesday. He would go 3 weeks from there on a Friday. I would go on a Saturday. It was like, it never matched up until we were at the very end when we like fine tuned all the vocals. And there was a song called Chasing Divinity that I needed a solo for. I knew what I wanted, but I couldn't play it because I'm not good enough. And I'm like, I know who's good enough. Sebastian's good enough. He could totally do this. So I sent him the song. Didn't even tell him what I wanted him to do. I was just like, hey, what do you think of the song? Do you think you could do something for me in this song? And he sent something back like almost immediately that was exactly what I wanted. You know, it sounded like Hangar 18, like Rust in Peace era Megadeth, Marty Friedman. You know, it was really, really good. It was so good. I like fell out of my chair laughing. It was amazing. And I asked him if he would be in the band, if he would consider doing half of the solos on the record. And he was absolutely down for that. So we ended up going back. We erased some of my solos and we made it like kind of like a Slayer, Hanneman King type thing where the songs either have me and Sebastian. One of us is on the left and one of us is on the right. That's how you know. You could tell if you listen to the record. One of us is really good and one of us is an old dude. It's kind of sloppy. You can figure it out. And then some songs are just me and then some songs are just him. But it's a very equal division of labor, which in my, you know, traditional dictatorship, I don't allow. I'm usually the only guitar player that records and like, you know, decides what happens. But Sebastian has good taste and he made a lot of good decisions that I think made the record a lot better. And it made me a lot more comfortable and open to possibly collaborating more in the future and letting other people in because it was a really positive experience. And that's how the record came to be in a nutshell. That's the whole thing.
Now, did Mike write the lyrics or did you write the lyrics? Or was it both?
Mike wrote the lyrics. If I wrote the lyrics, it would be terrible. I'm not good with words. I'm a music guy. I'm a song and dance man.
So what's it like giving your sonic, you know, I guess the instrumental to someone and having them put their own lyrics on top of that? Does that feel invasive or does that look like, what's that feeling like?
It's amazing. It's like putting a cake in the oven and then you pull it out, you know what I mean? And you're like, whoa, and you get to taste it for the first time. And with Integ, there was like you know, Dwid refines and refines and refines, and you don't hear anything until it's done, which can be very suspenseful. It could be like a really long time, you know? And it's like, this was a lot more like, a lot more back and forth, you know what I mean? So I got to like, you know, hear the songs in different stages and it was cool, but Mike knows what he was doing, you know? And together we worked something that neither of our bands have done in the past that I thought was really cool is we really focused on having a verse chorus structure to the songs. All the songs kind of follow that pattern, almost like an AC/DC, you know, arrangement. And I think it makes the record like 1,000 times more fun to listen to because it goes by quickly and it's all, you know, it's memorable and it's easy to follow. And I think it's cool. It was a challenge for both of us because neither of us have bands that write songs in that fashion. None of my bands have ever been verse chorus bands, unless you count Slumlords. It's, you know, it was designed to be like that. But yeah, so yeah, I totally left it to Mike and it didn't disappoint. It was awesome.
Let's play a song, come back and talk more about End Rain and some other stuff. Dom, what song should we play for our midway break?
My favorite one, Chasing Divinity.
Here's Chasing Divinity by End Rain, out July 14th.
Release me from this flesh. I
And we are back. In the press materials for Endgame, here's what it says. Taking musical inspiration from 80s linchpins Amoebix, Bathory, Slayer, and Cro-Mags, which are four of some of my favorite bands ever. For me, Amoebix is like the band. I'm not going to say Amoebix is the best band ever, but I'm going to say they're tied for the best band ever. First of all, Dom, Amoebix, Arise or Power Remains, where do you stand? Or Winter?
Monolith guy. Monolith is my favorite. I love them all. You know what I mean? I didn't really like the last one that much.
Sonic Mess. See, actually, let's get into that real quick. Is everyone says that? I fundamentally disagree. I love Sonic Mess. I think the error that Amoebix made is they ended with that with the last track, which out of context, that last track sounded almost like alt rock. But then for me, when I hear in the context of the album, I'm like, oh no, it's Joy Division, because it's got that. I mean, the album's got that opening Shield Wall, which is like just crunch, crunch, crunch. They got the midsection, The Messenger, which is like Pink Floyd. And then it ends with like that Joy Division type ambiance, if you will. I thought that reunion record was among the best reunion records ever, but I'm pretty much going to think that. I love that record.
I don't, you know, it's like, I would never cut down your opinion, because I think that's, you've given valid reasons to think it's a great record, but it just didn't resonate with me that way. It's just, I don't, maybe it wasn't the record I was looking for at the time. And maybe later on in life, I'll go back and be like, because I do that a lot, you know, I'll go back and I'll listen to a record that I didn't like or connect with, and then later on I'll connect with it in a different way, you know, and I think it's cool. But Monolith, man, it's just like, if you know, if Cro-Mags were like in the movie Mad Max Road Warrior, it would be Monolith, you know. It's just like the most ruthless, just like post-apocalyptic dudes on motorcycles record I can imagine, you know. And we listened to it, Joshy turned me on to it, and we just listened to it over and over again, and like I love it. So yeah, that was like I was very, very obsessed with Monolith and with Under the Sign of the Black Mark when I was writing these songs. I would listen to those records like on repeat. I thought they were just, like I said, they're old records. They weren't new releases by any means, but they connected with me later in life and resonated with me. Whereas like Best Wishes and like what's the other one that you mentioned? Master Puppets, or things that I've kept my whole life, you know what I mean? They've always been around. So it was cool to like have like new blood in the form of old records shaping the sound.
I used to put Monolith below Arise, but anymore I think I put them on equal footing, especially after the remaster of Monolith. Like once you kind of get that record, it really is an amazing record. Let's talk about someone even more dangerous, the Cro-Mags. So I love the Cro-Mags. Whenever someone says Best Wishes is their favorite Cro-Mags album, I don't agree with that. Harley didn't used to be my favorite vocalist, but now actually Harley is my favorite vocalist of Cro-Mags.
He's the best.
Where I have issue with Best Wishes is the 80s production. It sounds very stale and flat to me. You don't feel that way?
I mean, I understand that perspective 100%. And like you said earlier, I don't agree with it, but I see it. And it's a valid perspective for sure. But I like it. I think it sounds like Master Puppets. I think the production kind of has like a Master Puppets quality to it, which is really cool. And I think, you know, it also birthed like a renaissance of that sound when like Power Trip did a Manifest Decimation and Arthur Risk was producing records. And I thought it was a really cool, like, I think it's a cool characteristic that obviously can, like anything else, can overstay its welcome once you have hundreds of records that have the reverbed out vocals and the big Normandy sounding production. But fuck, dude, I love Best Wishes. I think it's lightning in a bottle, you know, it's amazing.
I'd love for Harley to do a live version of that album. I think I could really get behind it then if you get a live version.
Did you ever listen to that one? The one that was like Hard Times in the Age of Quarrel or whatever? It's like a double LP? It's like a...
Yeah, but that's got John Joseph singing. And frankly, you know, for... But I think... I don't even know if they do. Or no, I guess they do Best Wishes tracks, but Harley sings on them, don't they? Doesn't he?
Yeah, they go back. Yeah. They switch back and forth. I've seen them where they're both in the band, they would kind of like, you know, switch off and do different things, which was really cool. Harley's a better vocalist. Harley's like just a better everything. You know what I mean? He's like,
I agree. I gotta say the
you know, just like just I kicks ass on all.
I think Harley, since the album called Harley Flanagan Cro-Mags, I think since then he's been on absolute fire. I love that album. I love the I love the Cro-Mags In the Beginning album and the Dr. No. I think Harley's on fire. I just hope he keeps it up. You know what I mean? So
I wish that Harley's solo album could have been a Cro-Mags record, because out of the whole lot, that's my favorite. That was the record that made me be like, holy, like, wow, this dude is like kind of, you know, kind of old. He's kind of silver. And he's like hitting it harder than dudes half his age. You know what I mean? It was amazing. What a record. That Harley Flanagan solo album was unreal.
And actually, and we'll get back to End Rain in a second. But what's crazy about that, the listeners probably know, but if they don't, is Harley went to CBGB's for some Cro-Mags reunion show. At the time, Cro-Mags was John Joseph. And there was a scuffle, and they found a knife on Harley, and there was a big fight, and he got his leg broken, and he went to jail for a little while, but the charges got dropped, and he's got out. The cover of that album has someone holding a knife on the cover, which is crazy. And then basically the whole album kind of follows that theme, especially the last track, which I absolutely love. And here's where Harley, I would say, is an exceptional lyricist. He actually kind of has the Nick Blinko skill in that he'll say something that on its face seems not that like poetic, but then when he says it, it sounds amazingly poetic. And I think the last track is the same motherfuckers that will smile, will stab you in the back or something like that. And if I sang that, it would be like, all right, dude. But then when Harley's like screaming it in the aftermath of this whole event, it's like so deep. He's so good at that.
Fans are real. Yes. It's coming from a really sincere place. You know what I mean? It's definitely like pulling from life experience to make that happen. And I think that's cool. I think that's it's not something you get a lot. You know what I mean? A lot of hardcore is cosplay and kind of like just imitating the bands you look up to. I don't mean that as a derogatory way. I think it's cool you imitate the things that influence you. That's great. But I mean, like, shit, it gets no realer than that, you know. That or Cold as Life is like to me, like, kind of raises a whole new bar as far as like putting those lyrics to actual practice in real life, you know.
What do you want the listener to take from End Rain or the new record?
It's like I had mentioned, you know what I mean? For me, everybody's take on shit is different. And they're going to go into it looking for different things, whether it's like, you know, connecting with the lyrics or just want to hear some dudes that can play, rip it up, or just to hear like, you know, a tight put together record. And I think for me, what I always hope for is that it's something that they're going to listen to from beginning to end. And maybe it'll inspire them to make something, you know what I mean? Like, I always thought it was cool, like when somebody like heard Pulling Teeth, Paranoid Delusions, and wanted to make a weird record like that. You know what I mean? It's just, I don't know. I feel like feeding the machine. You give somebody your coolest ideas and you put them out there, and then somebody puts their spin on it and, you know, does their version of cool idea, and then it comes around and it kind of robins around, and by the time it gets back to you, it's something totally different, and then do your next thing. And then it's like a cycle of life, right? Artistic cycle of life, you know, as lame as that sounds, but that's what I hope. I hope people just like, you know, like they enjoy it. They listen to it and they're like, wow, this is, you know, this was worth my time. This was worth my 20 minutes or whatever.
Dom, there's a bunch I want to talk about. I don't want to keep the listeners on for 2 hours, but I'm just going to hit you with some stuff and then play another track, and then maybe we'll do a little bit of news. Dom, you emailed me earlier today about some other projects. Can we talk about those briefly?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so Dom has three other bands that he's doing in addition to End Rain. One is called Permanent Mistakes, which was going to have Mikey Erg on vocals, but Mikey got too busy, and so now it's going to be his own thing, and it also has Sebastian from End Rain on it, so that's kind of cool. I guess, Dom, you've never done a pop punk band before, ever, have you?
No, and that was part of the pandemic challenge, right? I was like, you know, I've always loved bands like Ergs and Kid Dynamite, and I always thought it'd be cool to write like 1 minute to the point pop punk songs, you know? Someone, compared it to Dillinger 4, which I thought was cool. And it's just like filling in the blanks on that was Chris Kuhn from Pulling Teeth played bass, and Lucas Karskaden from a band called Dead Mechanical, Baltimore band. They're fantastic. They were around the same time Pulling Teeth was. He ended up doing vocals, and it was another thing like Sebastian with End Rain, where I sent him the songs and didn't tell him what I wanted, and he ended up giving me exactly what I wanted. So it was like that synergy was there. So that was another thing, like how End Rain came to be, where the songs just got bounced around to different people and it took on a life of its own. That was actually the first one that got completed and got like the whole EP got recorded in a real studio and got done for real. And we're going to try to do another one. I hope so, because I like everybody that contributed to that had really cool ideas. I think we can do something really fun with it, you know?
And then Dom also has another band called Cost House of Fate. And that's in, well, I guess I agree. I think it's cool that it's influenced by Pentagram and Ozzy. But you also have an influence that I think a lot of people wanted to admit to, Don Dokken.
Love Dokken. Yeah, it's all over End Rain too. The band's actually called Cost, C-O-S-T-E.
Oh, I see.
The song was called House of Fate. It's yeah, Cost came to be from just listening to a lot of 80s heavy metal, like that 83 window, 83 to 85. It's amazing, you know? Like that whole like Shout at the Devil, Bark at the Moon, even Kill 'Em All, you know what I mean? There's just like so much amazing stuff happening at that time. And Dokken is all over the End Rain record too. George Lynch is one of my favorite guitar players. He's like the master of doing the power chord that shifts from a regular root and fifth to an augmented fifth and a diminished fifth. So it has that real sinister like Dream Warriors riff or like When Heaven Comes Down. So yeah, that's all over the Cost album. That's it's much more designed to be like a record that would have came out in 1983, like a straight up 83 heavy metal record. And that is Scott from Bloodlet on vocals. He's amazing. He's an incredible voice. A lot of people, you know, don't know him outside of Bloodlet, but if you listen to his other bands like Junior Bruce, you can really hear his range or Hollow Leg, and he's phenomenal, you know, so really looking forward to doing that.
Somewhat similar to that, I remember at one of the A389 fests, there was a zine that you made that was being handed around of like people just talking about how much they love Kiss. Do you remember that?
Of course. The solo album. Solo album roundup.
I'm not even a Kiss fan at all, but I really liked that because it was whimsical and amusing. And I feel as though in heavier music, in metal, there's not enough. I mean, in the 80s, there was a lot of whimsy. I mean, if you look at bands like Exodus or SOD, there's a lot of whimsy and humor and stuff. And now I feel like everyone's trying to be serious all the time. And they feel that a little bit of whimsy makes that facade crumble. Whereas if you ask me, if we look at Peter Steele of Typo Negative, one of the heaviest guys there is, but he's always cracking jokes. I feel as though whimsy, if you trust your inherent, I guess, darkness or badassness to be funny, then it makes you seem that much more intense, where I feel a whole lot of people in metal particularly metal and maybe metalcore, they're scared to be funny and have fun. Do you agree or do you disagree? And that's why I like the Kiss zine, because it was funny. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you know, but it wasn't meant to be funny, but it's cool. You thought it was funny. I fucking love Kiss. It's my favorite band. So it's like, you know, I agree with you where it's just like, if you're confident in your skin, then you could be whoever you want to be and it isn't going to matter. You know what I mean? The scariest dudes are like, you know, the dudes that can... are comfortable with anything, you know? And I agree. The people that are like, you know, very serious and like... mean mugging all the time, and it's like all the songs about how they're gonna kick your ass or, you know, whatever. It's just like, you know, that stuff, a young, you know, younger person, younger audience that's looking for that is gonna eat that up. But, you know, your old dude like me is just like, that's not really what I want out of music and out of the experience, you know. Not really into it's like a self-aware, I guess being self-aware is a better way to put it, you know what I mean? Having that level of self-awareness makes something appealing to me, and I think that's cool.
I find it interesting how forgiving of the audience Dom is, where Dom's like, people, the young people, some of them, that's what they want. Or like the middle-aged people, that's what they want. You know, whereas I'm like, the audience is getting it wrong. I'm right. Dom is much more forgiving of the audience.
We were young too, though, man. We were dicks. You know what I mean? It happens. You think with the grace comes with age.
I mean, my favorite punk was always stuff like Dead Kennedys or Dead Milkmen or the Screamers, stuff that had sort of a chaotic whimsy and fun to it, even though it had serious topics, you know, which is why I personally am, quote, offended by, I'm a tough band and we sing about tough things and you better not like us or we'll beat you up. I can't stand those bands. You know what I mean? So anyways, this one's heavy, and this is the last of the other projects. This is a band called, is it LVLTR 02, or is it a band called
Love Letter? What's that? Love Letter without the vowels, so it's like literally.
Oh, yeah, Love Letter. Well, here, I'm going to read to the listeners Dom's explanation of Love Letter. Check this out. This is my grunge band, heavily influenced by Weezer Blue, Jawbreaker, and Dennis Wilson, Pacific Ocean Blue. What's neat about this is I wrote most of it and laid it out driving my ex-wife off to stay with her family right before I divorced her during a pandemic blizzard. It was a heavy time. Dom, that's some heavy stuff, man. And I
I mean, it's like we said, it's like it's a different shade of what you said about Harley Flanagan. I think like the coolest things about like something authentic is when it's pulled from real life experience, you know? And that record came from like a real dark place and like sorting out a lot of shit that thankfully is, you know, well behind me, and I've moved on to much greener pastures on all ends. But yeah, it sucked. And I just remember driving in that blizzard, having to be in the car, and like the Dennis Wilson Pacific Ocean Blue was on, and I was just like, man, this is fucking miserable, you know? And that's how that kind of came to be. And that record's actually almost finished. We just finished tracking the vocals for it, and everybody should be getting to hear some of that pretty soon. I'm really, really, much like Permanent Mistakes, it's kind of a step out into a totally different box, something I've never done before. It's like, you know, Weezer Blue was a bummer, is a good way to put it. And I think, you know, like with like anything else, anyone that's been in those shoes or is my age and has lived through something similar, it'll resonate. Maybe they'll be able to, you know, feel some sort of comfort or companionship out of it, which is the intent.
So how are you feeling now? Are you feeling good now? Are you still feeling bad? A little bit of B?
I met my current wife like 2 years ago, and it's like it was the best thing that ever happened to me. You know, I finally met, like, I'm like 40. I'm 46 now, and like for the first time in my life, it's like I've ever met anybody that like is totally like checks all the boxes and is exactly the person I'm supposed to be with. There's no question. You know what I mean? It's like I don't even have. It's just like I think it's one of those things where life kind of like has to like do the weeding for you because you're too close to the forest to see the trees for what they are. You know. Or is the other way around, close to trees, see the forest? I don't know. It's getting late. But okay. No, I'm in a, you know, it's life's been amazing. It's been nothing but sunshine.
I guess last for this section, and then we'll just zoom through about two or three news stories because I do want Dom's opinion on some news. Integrity. Are you in Integrity? Are you a supporting player in Integrity? What's the status of Integrity?
I'm on the benches, as I like to say it. Integrity is always, you know, always got a space in my heart, and I'm always there if I'm needed. But it's something where everything they're doing is not something my life has room for. You know, I have my kids the majority of the time, which doesn't allow for much. You know, I can't travel, pretty much is like the long short of it. You know, I work full time, and I spend all my time with them. So it's like with everything Integ's doing, I just don't have time. But I played on the last Flexi they did, and I have a bunch of songs, you know what I mean? So when it comes time to do the new record, you know, when I still talk every day, it's like when nothing's changed between us, it's just that I can't be there. And whatever he wants to do, you know, I'm game, I'm easy, you know. So it's always a pleasure. It's like I said, it's my favorite band, that's not Kiss. So it's like, if I'm needed, count me in, I'll be there.
Well, I will say, if listeners, I mean, I'm sure everyone's is listening, probably, if they haven't heard Howling for the Nightmare Shall Consume, mind-blowingly great record, probably my second favorite Integrity record after Humanity's The Devil, which is no insult by any means.
Thank you.
So and also End Rain, very cool. Dom's contributions to Integrity kind of solidified and put all in one place, which is very cool. Dom, let's play one more track. You want to play an End Rain track? You want to play an Integrity track? You want to play one of these other bands? And we'll come back and we'll do the, what should we play?
Let's play Integrity. Can we play Serpent of the Crossroads? That's my favorite song. Integrity.
And this is Serpent of the Crossroads by Integrity.
Yeah.
And we're back, Dom. I'm not going to keep you too long. I just want to zip through a couple of news stories because I really am interested in your perspective on some of these stories. And actually, I lost track of them, but I will get them in 1 second. And this first story that we're going to talk about today is the following story. It is this that I am pulling up. Oh, here we go. Okay. Okay. So anyways, Dom, this is, I'm really more interested in your perspective as a record guy than really a statement on the music itself. Offspring released the 15th anniversary of Rage and Grace. People that got it were surprised to hear that half the tracks or so were the bleeped or censored or radio clear tracks. Offspring issued a statement saying that we didn't intend to do that, and we know that was going to happen, and we didn't even know there were clean versions. We are going to fix the issue, which essentially I took to read is you can't trade your record in for a corrected one, but you can buy a new one when they repress it again, if they repress it. This gets a little trickier because after this story came about, I thought Offspring sold their entire catalog, and indeed they did sell their catalog in 2016 to a company called Roundhill, which is through Universal, I believe. And so at any rate, Roundhill is one of these record labels that buys catalogs or even entire labels and then just reissues it kind of as one of the, what they call legacy label or simply reissue label.
Like that.
And so my guess is that Offspring doesn't really have much to do about this, except for the terms of their contract of sale of the catalog was that they have to say, you can go buy this record now, even though maybe they're not getting any money directly from it. And of course, they can't say anything bad about it. I got to say, from my perspective, and this is just kind of speculation, is when these legacy labels or rather reissue labels buy these catalogs, they want to make as much money as they can to flip stuff over as quickly as they can. That's why an error like this kind of pops up, in that there's not someone that actually cares about the band. Not that I really care about Offspring. I don't dislike Offspring. I just don't care. What I'm saying is, if it was a label or an artist that really cared about Offspring, they would have caught this error. So the fact that this error popped up, I would say, is just symptomatic of these kinds of labels, and also the recent trend we've seen in the past 5 or 6 years. These labels and essentially investment companies buying publishing and even masters. Stevie Nicks, what the hell's his name? Bruce Springsteen. Who else? Paul Simon. I think you're going to see more of this issue. But also, it's not that hard to listen to a test press. Dom, A, what's your opinion on this? And B, can you please tell people, please, 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 always listen to your test press.
I feel like, you know, once you get to a certain level, you're so far removed from that process that, you know what I mean? Even if those dudes wanted to have their hands on, I feel like when you're that part of a bigger machine, the parts are going to move without your involvement, and there's not much you can really do about it, you know, unfortunately. And yeah, you're right. It's about collecting a check at the end of the day, and there's no shame in that. I just think they're at a much bigger level than to have, you know, it's not like they're reissuing the record themselves and having their hands on every mix. You know what I mean? They got someone taking care of it. But yeah, listening to your test presses is imperative. But I also wonder, at least at that level, would they have even gotten test presses? I'm sure they would have just, you know.
Probably. I mean, they don't own it, so they probably wouldn't even run it past. And actually, it can be dangerous to run it past them. Because if they, I mean, this is from a business standpoint, it can be dangerous to run it past the band. Because the label that now owns it could run it past the band. And the band could say, oh, well, we want this different. And then if the label says, well, we don't want to do that, then, you know.
It's a total cop-out move on a label, and to do that, to just kind of push it through without the band's okay. You know, it's not how I would operate, but I've definitely seen it happen, and I've definitely, you know, it's out there. It happens. That really depends. If you really give a shit about your catalog that much, then it might be worth hanging on to, I guess. But like I said, there's also no shame in collecting a check and getting the fuck out if you're done. If you're, you know, if life looks different for you now, then so be it.
I think you just answered this question, but I interviewed Dale Crover once, and I said, I think was it Bob Dylan that sold a lot of it? No, the David Bowie estate. Maybe Bob Dylan did too. I can't quite remember. But I said to Dale Crover, I said, if someone came and said, we'll give you $30 million for all the Melvin stuff, Dale said, I would take it in a second. I said, but would a part of you feel sad about losing ownership of your songs? And his answer was, A, no, because it shows that music has value, and B, I could always write more songs. If someone came to you, Dom, and said, we want to buy all Dom's stuff, would you sell?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, well said.
I share Dale Crover's sentiment 100%. I would just make more songs. You know what I mean? It's just like the songs already exist in their original intended form. for those people. And I think this is really interesting because there's a 90s band that I really loved, a band called IRE, I-R-E, ended up becoming Black Hand, Cursed. Like, there was one of the predecessors of those bands. Obsessed. They were like, you know, one of the early greats of those, like, Glacier fucking riff bands, like, you know, early Cave-In or early Neurosis or like the Hydra Head. Shit that became like popular with Hydra Head. And I wanted to reissue their discography and do like a collection, get everything cleaned up and remastered. And when I contacted Radwan about it, he's just like, nah. He's like, you know, if you were there, that's who I want to hear those records. Those records wouldn't have a time and place in like today's world. They were there. For the people that were there when it was actually happening. And something really struck me with that, where I was like, it was incredible. You know what I mean? It was the best rejection I've ever gotten, because it was like really like, it gave a different perspective that I never really thought about. But yeah, I would totally sell all that shit, because it's like pulling teeth. You know what I mean? If you were there from 05 to 2012, you were there, you saw it. And if you really want to know, you can track down those records and hear what those records originally sounded like.
Well,
pay a bunch of money to
keep it,
then be my guest, man. I don't know. It would have to be a good amount of money, to be fair. But yeah, I'd be okay with it.
I agree that people can certainly track down records, but I disagree with the concept that, like, go back to Danzig. Danzig still hasn't reissued 1 through 4, where I know for a fact that they filed copyright termination for Danzig 3. I don't know about 1, 2, and 4. Or Sam, I know he owns Samhain. He right. could reissue Samhain. He could make so many people happy by reissuing Samhain. And also, we'd make a lot of money. It's a win-win situation. Plus, I think it's if people want to enjoy your art, why keep it secret and not let people enjoy your art? I think artists, if they can make money doing it, should make their stuff as wide. Like, I can't get behind, let's keep it secret for the sake of being secret, you know? That's just my opinion.
And that's okay. But you know what I mean? At the end of the day, that's, you can't tell no one what to do. It's like negative.
That's true.
And if somebody wants to be difficult, it's their spot to be difficult, you know? And they earned that right. You know, Danzig more than anybody, you know? He can dance. He can do whatever he wants.
Why do you think he won't reissue some? I mean, he did reissue Danzig 5, 6, 7, 8. Why do you think he won't reissue Samhain? It seems so odd to me.
I don't have a reason, man. I'm just like, you know, unless he's like, you know, Phantom releasing all the bootleg versions that come out.
I've heard that theory. I have heard that theory in that, and I don't believe this theory, mind you. But someone said to me that he doesn't want to get involved in the logistics of pressing record, which frankly, if he owns the rights to Samhain, which he does, there actually aren't that many logistics, frankly. I mean, he could just license it to somebody. But I have heard someone say to me, he doesn't want to get involved in the logistics. So someone will come say, Danzig, I want to bootleg 2,000 records. And he'll just say, give me, I don't know, $10,000. And then they can go bootleg it and he won't prosecute the bootlegs, you know.
Right.
I don't believe it, but I've heard that theory.
It sounds like it's a little too rational for that lexicon. But, I don't know, man. And that's like kind of that's one of my favorite things about Danzig, is that it's just like there's you'll never unwrap that box, you know.
It's just like, I agree with you 100%. And one of the wonderful people make fun of Danzig. I don't agree with any of that. It's like, he's a weird guy, and that's what makes him great. I want Danzig to be weird. I don't want him to be some guy I can be friends with. I want Danzig to be some dude from outer space, you know? But let's talk about...
Like, oh, I listen to those records because I like the records, man. It's like, I don't want to... It's not like I want to hang out with the dude.
Let's talk about one last story. This is the flip side of the discussion we were just having. The second Cro-Mags album, Best Wishes, has been re-released under the BFE and Astral Place labels. BFE is actually a guy who doesn't buy records. He licenses records from inactive labels and then reissues them himself. This version of Best Wishes, which has just been re-released, has been denounced by Harley of the Cro-Mags. Harley said, the reissue of Best Wishes on vinyl is, again, like the reissue of Age of Quarrel, not a release that supports the people who wrote or played this album. The players who wrote on this and played on Best Wishes have never been paid for it, or even received an accounting. When we last checked, Profile, or whatever they call themselves now, basically said, sue us if you want to know anything about what you signed away without counsel as kids. We thank you for listening, loving and listening to the music, keeping it alive and passing it on to the listeners. We can't blame you for wanting or buying it. We are music fans too, we get it, but we think it's important that you know what you are buying. Dom, the Cro-Mags mess with the Age of Quarrel, where the band doesn't have the rights to it, the Best Wish the band doesn't have the rights to it. There's massive infighting among the Cro-Mags. What can we do about this mess? Or is it part of the beauty of the Cro-Mags that it is such a mess, and that's part of the interesting part of the music?
I mean, I think it's a harsh lesson to anybody that's, you know, getting involved in the music industry to, you know, shit can go, you know, what are you going to trade for fame and infamy? You know what I mean? Not, I'm not saying willingly, but I'm saying, you know, things come with a price. If you make a deal with the devil, and there's people that are out there to take advantage of people. And, you know, that's the case in this one, and it sucks. And sometimes your hands are tied and there isn't much you can do. And I think, you know, it sucks. I'd love to see those dudes get paid and get their dues. But, you know, on the other side of the coin, their legacy lives on, and it's so much bigger than a vinyl pressing of Best Wishes. You know what I mean? Where it's just like, yeah, it'd be nice to have a few $1,000 to give each of those dudes, but that record is forever. You know what I mean? The impact it made is forever. People will go see Harley play forever because of how great that record is. And I think that's kind of like the token. That's what you traded, you know? Not saying it's right by any means. I think, you know, it sucks. But I mean, like, when you're kind of trying to rationalize a situation that can't be solved in any sort of way, and you kind of have to rationalize it and put it to bed, that's my takeaway from it, is that, hey, you know, it touched a lot of people and will continue to do so. And that's, like, given the circumstances, that's the best possible outcome you can hope for, you know?
Well, great closing line, but I'm going to ruin that by asking you one follow-up question because I'm interested in your opinion. But that was a great – so, listener, imagine that was the last thing we said on this podcast. 18-year-old kid, 17-year-old kid, should he buy the $22 Best Wishes reissues, or should he save up his money and buy the $200 original press, or neither? What should the 18-year-old kid do?
It doesn't matter, because if he buys that $200 one, they're not going to see the money either. Some dude is, you know what I mean? There's like some dude like me that's trying to sell my copy of Best Wishes if anyone's interested. No, I'm just kidding. But you know what I mean? At that point, it's removed from the, it's the kind of like a different version of that Offspring situation where it's not, neither situation is going into the band's hand. So it's like, I buy the $22 version. You know what I mean? It's just like, it just makes sense, you know?
Well, there you have it. And of course, always go see bands live and buy their t-shirts, because that's the best way to give them cash. Yeah. Dom, thanks again for being on the show. It's been a real, real pleasure. Any last things you want to leave the listeners with? Anything they should check out? Aside from End Rain, the new album out July 14th via Relapse Records. It's real cool. It's got Twit on it. It's got Legendary Pink Dot Singer on it. And it's got a lot of great riffs, and it kicks ass.
Thank you, John. No, I think we talked about everything. Okay. I'm never up this late, so I'm starting to shut down. I don't even know, you know, what to close on. But thank you. It was really great talking to you.
Should we close them out with a Kiss track or a Dokken track, Dom?
Yes. Let's do I've Had Enough, Into the Fire from Animalize, which is if you listen carefully, you might notice a little lift End Rain pulled from the track.
Well, there you have it. This is Kiss. And once again, thanks, Dom. New album out, and the first album out, End Rain, July 14 on Relapse. And we'll see you next week.
Well, thanks, John. It was great talking to you.